Joining us this morning from the National Museum of the Great Lakes, Chris Gilchrist joining us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We appreciate you having us in this morning. And we're going to talk about Great Lakes freighters. Now, I saw a picture. Somebody was posting, I guess there was a freighter out in the distance over Lorain recently.
Oh, they go every day off Lorain and come into Lorain almost every day.
Really? So if you were there, is there a certain time?
No, I think you just have to be out on the lake for a good amount of period of time in order to see one coming by. Certainly every day between the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and coming down to places like Lorain and Cleveland and Ashtabula and other ports, you'll see activity on the lake.
We see those, like you say, maybe every day now during the summer. We see them far away. Can you give us a perspective of how big these ships are?
Well, the biggest are over 1,000 foot long, which is 3 football fields. They're about 100 to 105 feet wide. They carry fully loaded 67,000 tons of cargo. So if you put that in perspective, if an automobile weighs 1 ton, a small compact car weighs 2,000 pounds, it's carrying the weight of 67,000 of those cars in its cargo hold. Wow. And so there, and the 1,000 footer is the biggest on the Great Lakes. There's 11 or so of them operating in general. Then you go to the smaller ones, more of the river boats that go up the Cuyahoga River or up the into Saginaw or into the more smaller rivers to deliver to the mills and other places. And those range from 600 to 725 feet long.
How much of a crew would a ship like that have?
Well, over the years, it's because of technology, it's gotten smaller and smaller. You don't have to have a crew shoveling coal into the boiler anymore. So, you've got probably a crews of anywhere from 25 to 30 on a self-operating Great Lakes freighter.
Then the lakes shut down in the wintertime. You don't see the freighters out there, of course. What do those people, those workers do?
That's vacation time. That's a lot of them will go to Florida, which makes a lot of sense. But that's built into their contract in terms of their they know that when the locks up at the Sioux close around the first week of January, January 8th, January 12th, it really begins to slow down. But if the lakes don't freeze, and last year we didn't get a very good freeze on Lake Erie, you still had Great Lakes freighters delivering from, example, the limestone from Kelly's Island over to Cleveland. You still get some of that trade. When the lakes completely freeze, yes, everything shuts down. And I think it was 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, a freighter got caught off of Ashtabula. The ice got too thick, and even the Coast Guard couldn't break it out. And it took about 2 weeks to get that boat free. So if you're the crew, you're sitting on that boat not moving for 2 weeks. And so it depends on a lot of factors.
I thought, Craig, you were going to ask me, where do the freighters go?
That was next.
Where do they go? Is there a...
Well, they deliver all across...
Off-season, I think we're talking about. Off-season. Where are they?
It's known as going into layup. They find places across the Great Lakes where they can inexpensively tie up at a dock. A person comes on board to manage them, meaning he watches out for vandalism, watches out for, that if a pipe freezes and breaks, he can fix it, that sort of thing. But they lay up from first week of January until mid-March when they start getting everything ready for the next season. And then by usually the third or fourth week of March, they begin to break out and they begin to push through the ice and begin delivering. Certainly by April, they're running.
Talking this morning with Chris Gilchrist, the National Museum of the Great Lakes. You're here this morning because you're going to talk about a temporary exhibit you have.
Yes.
About how freighters get their name.
Yeah. The impetus for this exhibit, which is called Colonel James M. Schoonamaker, A Life Lived with Honor, was when you Google the name Colonel James M. Schoonmaker, which, by the way, he shares the name of a 618-foot artifact at our museum, the Colonel James M. Schoonmaker Museum Ship. But when you Google his name, the first three pages of information are about the boat itself. And his history gets a bit lost. And so we said to ourselves, let's do an exhibit about the man and what he accomplished in his life in order to be given the honor of getting a boat named for him. I think it's kind of sad. I mean, here's an example. Edmund Fitzgerald was a person. He was an entrepreneurial, innovative insurance executive at Northwestern Mutual Insurance Company when his company owned a Great Lakes freighter and it was named for him. Now, I can understand why the name Edmund Fitzgerald is more associated with the boat now, because that boat sank and it was a terrible tragedy. But the Colonel James M. Schoonmaker had no such tragedy, and now the boat's name is more well-known than the person's name. And so our exhibit was to try to bring that biographical information back to the people. And what we learned is this guy has an incredible life.
Tell us a little bit about him in the short time that we have here.
Sure.
And related to, and what was his connection with the Great Lakes? Does there have to be, and how does that all come about?
There doesn't have to be, but there most often is some type of business relationship. He is a Civil War veteran. He's a colonel. He rose to the rank of colonel after starting in the Civil War at the in 1862. In 2 years, he went from private to colonel. He wins the Medal of Honor at the Third Battle of Winchester in 1864 in the largest cavalry charge in American history. He then goes on to become a coal and coke entrepreneur, heads the largest, well, not the largest, but the most important railroad in American history, the Pittsburgh and Lake Erie Railroad. He heads that for over 30 years. And he's a philanthropist in Pittsburgh. He's interested in veterans' causes in the late 1800s and early 1900s. He really is kind of broke the mold when it comes to industrialists, because he really changed the industries that he worked in.
Did he have a beard? I want to look to see that up. If he's in the Civil War time,
we have some great photographs from his time from a private to a second lieutenant. He has a long, long beard, which was common at the time. When Edwin Stanton, Secretary of War, recommended him for being made a colonel in the Pennsylvania Cavalry, he cuts his beard and has a mustache. So he runs the gamut in terms of those men's physical appearances.
So how do we go from his name to the naming of a boat?
So as being a railroad executive in what was known as the Little Giant Railroad, which delivered coal, coke, iron ore to the Pittsburgh steel mills, he, of course, had a natural relationship with steel mill operators and owners, one named William P. Snyder, who ran Shenango Furnace Company. So William P., they became friends in the 1890s, and in 1909, Colonel Schoonmaker was invited on a trip on a boat called Shenango on the Great Lakes with William P. Snyder. And while they were passing through the Sioux, Colonel Schoonmaker turned to William P. Snyder and said, "You should build a boat that is a little bit bigger but wider so that it really comes to the edges of the locks, because you'll make more money." And 2 years later, the Colonel James M. Schoonmaker is launched and named for Colonel Schoonmaker because it was his suggestion. And so there was a business affiliation, there was a personal friendship, and also William P. Snyder said, this is a guy who really served his country, served his community, and deserves the honor of having a boat named for him.
Now, how did it end up where it is now? And that they able to...
The Shenango Furnace operated the boat up until the mid-1960s and then got out of the operating of Great Lakes freighters, and it was sold off to Cleveland Cliffs Company in Cleveland. They renamed it the Willis B. Boyer in the early 1980s. The Cleveland Cliffs Company got out of the business of operating freighters and sold it to the city of Toledo as a museum ship, where it stayed until 2011 under the city management as the Willis B. Boyer. We took over management of it in 1911, renamed it the Colonel James M. Schoonmaker and completely restored the vessel and then brought it to the museum from where it was located at International Park about a mile away, upriver to the new National Museum of the Great Lakes.
Is there a protocol or a procedure that takes place when they're naming something?
Well, there's a very specific event. It's the christening of the boat. And that's the traditional champagne being broke over the bow. In 1911, the colonel's daughter, Gretchen Schoonmaker, broke the bottle over the bow. And we found out in 2011 that she did the ceremony incorrectly. Because instead of saying, "I christened the Colonel James M. Schoonmaker," she was 11 years old, she said, "I christened the Papa." And she broke the bottle. In 2011, when we brought the name back to the boat and changed all the colors and returned it to its Shenango colors, we rechristened it. And the grandson of Colonel James M. Schoonmaker and his wife rechristened it at the exact moment 100 years from the time it was originally launched in 1911. We did it in 2011 on July 1st. And these events are attended historically by thousands of people.
And again, how large is that ship?
She's a small one, 618 feet. She could only carry 15,000 tons of cargo. But she was what was known as the Queen of the Lakes for about 15 years, which meant she could carry more cargo because she was significantly wider than any other boat. Other boats got longer, but none got wider until about 1927.
But this one is still about the length of two football fields.
Yep. Yeah. Let's put it this way. We recommend when people tour it, they leave an hour to go through the boat because it takes 15 minutes to walk from, one end of the boat to the other just along the deck.
It's appointed quite well inside. I'm looking at some of your pictures there. We see the outside and we see sort of the part that gets the weather. Inside, there's sort of really...
Well, the logic was, particularly with Shenango Furnace Company, which only had five boats during its time, operating at one time. But if you think of U.S. Steel, U.S. Steel had a fleet called Pittsburgh Steamship Company. And that fleet was bigger than the United States Navy in 1902. It had over 100 boats operating at one time. And these companies often wanted to take their guests, the owners themselves, their friends, their business clients, and people important to their interest on a trip from the upper lakes down to the lower lakes or vice versa. And so they would often have beautiful VIP accommodations for them. And, of course, the food could not be beat.
The food. Do you still have food on that
tour at all? We don't serve food because then you begin getting licensing.
Oh, okay.
And all,
I see.
That sort of stuff. But I will tell you, we do a members only pancake breakfast, which is free. And when you don't charge a fee, you can have a pancake breakfast and not get the licensing involved. And we have over 150 people come out in a period of 2 hours.
Never made pancakes on the water. I don't know whether the little waves have any indication. Shapes of the pancakes.
This boat, the ship, is it on the water?
It is on the water. It is in a slip. Okay. When the wind blows from the southwest and pushes the water out of Toledo towards Buffalo, she has about 4 inches of clearance between the bottom. When the wind blows from Buffalo down the lake, she has 4 feet of clearance. So she is in water.
And to Bruce's point, does it rock at all?
It does. You can hear it creak, and that sometimes scares people. They get on, they can hear the boat creak. It's metal. It's going to move. It's going to go back and forth a couple of inches. 2 years ago, we had a very, very strong wind from the southwest in December, and it moved the boat forward 8 feet. Which snapped off all of the ramps up to the boat because it's when something that big is being pushed by a very strong wind, there's not much that can really stop it. And so, it moves and you can hear it move and you can feel it move if there's a good wind.
When we see a ship like that, the ones we see on the lake now, how fast are they moving?
Well, you know, the fastest probably 17 miles an hour, and they do go by miles an hour. They don't use the ocean-going nomenclature for that. What I think is more interesting is that a 1,000-footer going 17 miles an hour, if they just turn off the engine, takes 5 miles to come to a complete stop. Because the weight and momentum mean something. And so they are industrial monstrosities that people really, you know, can't get their hand around until they're up on one. And you come on the Schoonmaker, and our docent says, if you put the Schoonmaker up against the Fifth Third Bank building in downtown Toledo, the Fifth Third Bank building runs, which is 27 stories, comes up about two-thirds up the boat. And our boat is considered a small one.
If someone decided to build a ship like that now, how long would it take to build?
Yeah, they haven't built any boats on the Great Lakes that are self-operating boats since the early 1980s. But, you know, 18 months to 2 years with 2 years for design issues beforehand, but actual construction, 2 years is would, you know, they could sometimes get them in 18 months, but it took some time.
Again, we're talking with Chris Gilchrist, the National Museum of the Great Lakes. You can always visit inlandseas.org to get all sorts of, I mean, watching the pictures on your slideshow here as well. What's a wiki, by the way? It says there's a, I'm looking at your museum, and then there was a quick thing there, and it said something about life of a wiki.
Oh, a wiki is when you bring up technology, I'm too old to understand that. But now when you put it in that context, a wiki is a Coast Guardsman or originally a member of the United States Lighthouse Service that would go and light the wick of a lighthouse light. And their nickname was Wiki. So,
you know, the Lorraine Lighthouse this Friday celebrating their 100th anniversary.
Oh, yes.
That
lighthouse
they've got there, too. This Friday also is the 175th birthday of Colonel James M. Schoonmaker.
And in his honor, we are on the 4th of July, we are open from 10 to 5. Any veteran or active duty military gets free admission to the museum on 4th of July. We're open from 10 to 5. There's lots of things to do in downtown Toledo. We encourage all veterans and active military to come take advantage of that and come on out and see the exhibit, because we have on display the Colonel's Medal of Honor from Virginia Military Institute, as well as a captured Confederate saber that the Colonel captured during his tenure in the Civil War. So we got great artifacts, interesting history, plus all the other things that are Great Lakes related.
See, not only the Great Lakes and people who like the ships, but you got now the military and
railroad,
the Civil War bumps.
Military. Yep, absolutely.
That sounds great. Well, we appreciate you coming in this morning, Chris.
Oh, thanks. No problem. Thank you.